No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I am joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affects the lives of all of us. So please join in the discussion by calling us at 888-627-6008 or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Now, we've just changed over to Station 1 a few weeks ago, so let me repeat that number again. 888-627-6008, and we'd like to hear from you. We have no guests today, so we're going to wing it and talk about whatever's on our mind, and hopefully we'll get you to join in the conversation. But before we get started, let me first introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from Arizona. Please call in because I already know everything that Kathleen knows about everything, and she's pretty much wrong, except for those few things that she agrees with me about, and there aren't very many of those, let me tell you. Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for helping to get the conversation started.
Oh, thank you very much, Senator Brown. It's always such a pleasure to be on the show with you. You're just such a conversationalist. And we agree on more than we disagree. You just don't like to admit it because you do come over to my side some of the time.
Let me just be upfront with you. I've got no money to give you, if that's what you're shooting at here. I'm broke. But yeah, no, we do agree on more things. We agree on the important things. And the most important thing is that I know you're really right more than you're wrong. So I've learned over the years to agree with you, and it's made my life easier.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So before we get started, before we go too far, I want to brag a little. In yesterday's New York Times, there was an article about me and my colleague Paul Strauss on page A12 in the A section above the fold. So you need to go check it out. The New York Times, man, this isn't the local newsletter. Yeah, this isn't the AU Park Citizens newsletter. Even the Washington Post. It's the New York Times. And they did a half a page article on us and what we do. And it was a really good article. So if you're out there listening, go to the Times. You can get it online. Or if you got $2.50, it cost me to go to the store and get one of those papers. I couldn't believe it.
If you have
$2.50, yeah, you can go pick up a copy. It's a day old. Maybe they'll give it to you for half price. What do you want to talk about tonight, Kathleen?
Well, I wanted to talk about something that, other than maybe the ATM debit card, has really impacted everybody's life, and that is that this is the 25th anniversary of the internet. And the internet, when you think about it, I really didn't know. I never thought about when it started, but it was in 1989, on March 12th. In 1989, Sir Tim Berners-Lee put forth a proposal to make information sharing possible over computers, using nodes and links to create a web that would eventually stretch worldwide and become the modern internet. That was 25 years ago. And it's just amazing to see what has happened in 25 years. Between now, what you've got? You've got, social media is actually so into our lives, much more than TV or radio sometimes, unfortunately, is, And so I just thought that was really interesting. And the next thing that I thought was interesting was 1991 was the first website. It was a simple white page with a couple of text links, and it went online in 1991. And then, of course, 1996 was actually the first use of the internet by the presidential campaigns of Clinton and Gore and Dolan Kemp. So well, can you imagine?
I guess this must have been the point at where Al Gore reinvented the internet, because he thought, I'm sure Sir Tim took exception at the time, but Al seemed to think that he created it. But yeah, it's amazing, Kathleen. I bought my first computer and my first personal computer in 1985. It cost me $5,000, and I bet you could buy a computer that did more than it could do. It basically all it was a word processor, and it was worth its weight in gold even as a word processor. But to think that the internet really just started 25 years ago and it's so taken over lives. My kids watch TV on it. They watch movies on it. They get information. Every day I pick up the Washington Post and get lighter and lighter, because newspapers are going out of business because everybody's getting their information on the internet.
And you wonder, you know, I mean, there's so many sources to get the information from. You know, you just Google, say, you know, 25th anniversary of the internet, and you've got so many sources. You wonder who's really factual. Is there a way to check this stuff? And, you know, think about it. Before 1996, it was non-existent to do fundraising online. And now that is such a way of doing business. So I remember I was working in New York City for the shopping centers, International Council of Shopping Centers. And I was up in the kind of like the computer section. And this guy said to me, hey, he said, come over here. You won't believe this. And I said, what? If you remember, you used to have the, what do they call it, where it was like F8 and F1 and all that stuff. You know, he says, look at this. You point and click. And I said, point and click. And yeah, it was, you know, the whole mouse thing. And yeah. I looked at it and I thought, oh my God, is really? You know, but it was so much easier than sitting there doing F1, F2. You know, you had this whole template. And that had to be what? I guess it was like 1987, 88. And look now, you know, we got wireless. And, you know, it's just kind of mind-blowing when you think about what technology has done to everyday people's life. And, you know, now revolutions are starting through social media, through the internet. Right. So 25 years, I don't think there's anything quite, maybe electricity, I guess, would be something that had such a strong impact on people's lives. But I thought that was interesting. So I wanted to just mention that to the audience, because I think we kind of just assume it's always been there in a way. We can't remember when it came into our lives because it just took over.
Yeah, and you wonder, you know, how we all know what the upside of it is, and the upside of it is amazing sometimes. I mean, I once saw on TV a report about a guy who was doing delicate heart surgery in a hut in Africa, and he was connected to the internet to heart surgeons at the top hospital in Boston, who were giving him instructions and helping him and watching through a webcam to see what he was doing. I mean, technology like that is just absolutely amazing. But then on the other hand, you know, we see the downside of it too. Cyberbullying, information, bad information that gets out all over the place before anybody has a chance to verify it. And I don't know about your kids, but my kids are pretty lazy when it comes to the internet. I don't think they search for information. So I think if you've got something out there, whether it's true or not, and it shows up, they believe it.
No, and they do believe it. You're right. And you know, I've had conversations with mine. I said, well, what other source did you check? Well, you know, and it's almost kind of like, well, it's on the internet, so it has to be the truth. Well, no, it's just like every other thing, that whether it's newspapers or commercials or advertisement, you can't believe it just because they say it's so. Right. You know, you have to investigate. So So, yeah, it is rather scary. And, you know, the internet with pornography, you know, that's a big issue. And then, of course, the whole issue of child pornography, it's just so much easier now. You go across, you know, thousands and thousands of miles. So there's definitely the plus side, you know, where people can learn what's going on, and then the negative side. But I just thought that was kind of an amazing thing that it was just 25 years ago.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, we're, you know, I was a direct mail consultant and pretty much, got rid of my business because, internet had really taken over. The post office itself, is in shape because of the internet, but, that's okay. We'll adapt. And, I think it's more upside than downside. So
right.
Well, another thing that happened this week, and I think that this is means a lot to you and I personally because we both worked for this guy. But Bob Strauss died.
Yes.
Bob Strauss was the former head of the Democratic Party when Kathleen and I were both there,
mm-hmm.
and he was also the premier partner, one of the senior partners in Akin Gump and Strauss, which was a big law firm here in Washington. And he was a political strategist for many years. And the thing that you and I were talking about earlier, Kathleen, which I think is most relevant, is that he was respected by both Democrats and Republicans. And he brought them together. Worked for Ronald Reagan, didn't he, at one point?
Yes. In fact, even Nancy Reagan and other Republicans turned to him to try to figure out, like, they would ask him, you know, well, what are the Democrats? Is there a way that we can compromise? So he actually became advisors to both Reagan and to Bush. And, you know, that just wouldn't happen in today. Washington society, you know, and that's, I think, the real problem of where we are headed, that at when I was with you, when we were in politics, there were centrists in both Democrat and Republican Party, and they could talk to each other. But what's happening now is that we don't have those guys anymore. So it's just extreme right and extreme left, and they will not speak with each other. They will not compromise. It's like, you know, to do so would be, you know, opening the door to the devil's pathway to hell. I don't understand it. But he was one of those guys, and they were claiming, you know, in all of the articles written about him, that it is an era that most likely will never find a place again in Washington politics, that centrist who was approached by both sides to help them come to a compromise that would be able to take our country forward. And we're seeing that, and especially in the past, I think, 7-8 years, we're not going anywhere. We're going from one. The pendulum is swinging left to the extreme and right to the extreme. You cannot govern a country like this. We have to be able to come and give and take. And without guys like Bob Strauss, I just don't know. I can just appeal to the younger people. Like, I know you had Diego, my son, which you did not turn into a liberal Democrat. You got to still work on that. But you had Zoe, who was with him there, both in the Republican Party of University of Arizona. And, you know, I hope that what you showed them, and they seem to be more of the taking that route where they could compromise with both sides. You know, I mean, I see my son as, you know, we're really far apart in politics, but I can see that with him, we both can somehow come to the middle. And that's what it's going to take. The youth is going to have to come in and step in and replace these guys who just will not talk to each other.
Well, you know, I think that's true. And I think there were many, many classic relationships over the years on Capitol Hill. John McCain, for example, from Arizona, and Ted Kennedy were best of friends, even though they disagreed on most things, you know, and you're right, you don't see that anymore. But I think in talking to Diego and Zoe, it's always good. If you're not out there interacting on some level with young people, you're really missing it, because young people well, you spend some time with young people and it'll restore your faith in the future. They really are amazing. And, you know, I talk to them about certain core issues that the Republicans have fought, things like gay marriage, that they're all in favor of. So mm-hmm. I think maybe the fact that they have a more, you know, let's not call it liberal because we don't want to upset them, but a more, a less conservative view about some basic issues like women's reproductive rights and gay marriage, marriage equality. I think that this may be the great hope for the Republican Party. You know, we had the same problem, if you remember, back in the early 1980s after Ronald Reagan won. We were too liberal. We mm-hmm. put up Walter Mondale. We put up Dukakis. We got our butts kicked because until a guy that was a little more conservative named Bill Clinton came along, and he saved our party. So I don't know who it's going to be for the Republicans, but they better find somebody quick, you know.
Oh,
I thought it was going to be Christie for a while, but I'm not sure about that now. I don't know how people feel about him. We'll just have to wait and see.
Well, it is amazing in talking. You know, I was really surprised when we had Zoe and Diego on our show a while back because they actually, the party itself or the Young Republican Party is not against gay marriage. I mean, I think that right. what they see is that the social issues, you know, are not as important as getting government spending under control, that taxes are too high. And, you know, when you do talk to people in things like different industries, whether it be in landscaping or whatever, there are a lot of regulations that make it very difficult, even in hiring people. I mean, look at it now. I mean, you gotta to get in, hired by some company takes forever, and you have to almost have it's like getting a secret, what do they call it, security clearance. Sure, I mean, sorry. You've got to go through so many hoops, and it just makes things so much more complicated. You know, you have to have more computer apps to be able to find out if people who are what they say they are. So, you know, it all is a cost on business. And, you know, the one thing that does push the economy is small businesses and their ability to be able to make profit and to be able to do their business.
Well, and you know, those were always the bread and butter issues for the Republican Party too. They were less, they had less of a social agenda and more of an agenda that pushed things like, lower taxes and less government regulation. And they need to get back to those core issues that appeal to people and get out of the social issues so much. You know, the woman from California who we had on, and by the way, it's hard to believe this, Kathleen, but month on April 14th, we will have been on doing this show every week for a year. So that's amazing. And we're going to try to get some of the people back who have been really good on the show for our anniversary shows in April. So make sure you're listening to them. But, you know, you asked the question to the woman who was head of the Republican Party of California, if you could to get your party in a better position. Can you remember what she said?
I do. She said that the Republicans should, let me see if I remember how she said it, that they need to be out of women's uterus right. should not be in politics.
Right. They need to get the uterus out of their platform, out of their party.
Exactly.
And and so there are a lot of Republicans out there that realize that and realize that some of the other social issues are too extreme on. And I think that guys like people like Diego and Zoe are the great hope of the Republican Party. And I hope that they hang in there and change things. You know, while we're on the subject of talking about great men like Bob Strauss who passed away, we should also point out that a not so great man went on to his rewards this week. Fred Phelps, yes. Founder of the Westboro Baptist Church, died at the age of 84. You're familiar with Mr. Phelps, Kathleen? He's the guy that went out to veterans' funerals and held up the bless dead soldiers because he wanted to get attention for his church. He was just a despicable person in my opinion, and I don't think the world will miss him, but I'm sure his followers would continue on. And that's one of the problems that we have with the internet too, is that it allows all these extremists to bless very quickly. You know, you can put a website out there, a hate website, and it doesn't take much for people to of similar minds to gravitate towards it. And you can do it almost anonymously. You know, back in the day, you at least had to stand up for what you believed in. Now you can hide behind a bunch of electronic layers of electronic curtains, and people really don't know who you are. So that's one of the downsides. I say, I hope that Minister Phelps has met the Lord, because I think he's got a lot of explaining to do.
Well, we've talked about two deaths, but there's something else. There's a birthday that this is something else that I think is a woman who's changed life for women in the past, I guess it would be, since the 70s, and that's Gloria Steinem. She turns 80.
Wow.
And I know. And there's a great picture. When I was looking on the internet and I saw that she was, it said, you know, this is what 80 looked, because she termed that, this is what 40 looks, this is what 50 mm-hmm. looks. And there's a picture of her with Betty Friedan. Remember Betty Friedan?
Yeah,
Eleanor
sure.
Guggenheimer, yeah. Eleanor Holmes Norton, your representative in D.C.
Is that right?
And Gloria Steinem, among the founders of the National Women's Political Caucus, July 1971. Now, you know, for all those young girls, and it was funny, you know, I was in a Rotary meeting, and we had these high school interns, and there were like three young women from the Douglas High School. And I just looked at them, and I asked them, I said, do you guys remember Title IX? And they said, Title IX? What's that? You know, and that was a huge, you know, government ruling that said that colleges had to provide for women's sports as much as they did for boys, right? For young men.
Yeah.
And I started asking them, I said, do you guys know about the ERA? None of them knew. They, in such a, you know, in their lifespan, don't realize just like, you know, what would that have been 40, 50 years ago? No, it's not even that long. You know, women were, in a lot of ways, second-class citizens. I remember when I started working, we were getting 15 cents to the dollar compared to men. And Gloria Steinem, you know, she was very pretty. So a lot of guys could handle her.
She was a Playboy. She worked in a Playboy club.
Yes, when she was young, right, in her 20s.
Yeah.
And because she was, you know, kind of good looking, she kind of like men could kind of take what she said better than coming from, like, say, Betty Friedan. But it's amazing what that woman and what the movement did, and how these young girls of today don't even know who Gloria Steinem is. So one thing that I think I'm always shocked about is that we just don't seem to do our history very well. We don't teach our young what they have to appreciate, because it wasn't so long ago that African Americans couldn't vote, that women, you know, didn't have the rights that they do today. And I think everyone needs to stop and appreciate what it once was and what it is now, because it's a lot of people that worked really hard to get where it is today, you know, to get women the ability to, if they, and you know, I'm not for affirmative action. If you have a woman and a man, if the man is a better candidate, then he should get the job. But before, women would never have even been considered. So if they are the better candidate, then he should get paid the same as men, and they should have the same rights. So, you know, I'd like to just, you know, kind of tip my hat off to Gloria Steinem. When I was working for Pat Schroeder, when she was running for president, Gloria did a fundraiser for her in her apartment, and I remember thinking, oh, I was going to go to this huge grand place. Boy, she had a little loft where she slept. It was a small apartment, and she had about 30 or 40 people, and it was a fundraiser for Pat Schroeder. And she was so approachable. I mean, it was like she was just like another woman on the street that I might have stopped and talked to when I was at the bus stop. I mean, she really impressed me. And I know she's got a lot of people that, you know, kind of like, oh, you know, remember Miss Magazine? You know, people were against that. But she did a lot for women. And I think I just want to salute her for being 80. I think she went to celebrate it in Botswana, and she's got a great – it's a great article just about her views. If anyone wants to go on the internet and just type in Gloria Steinem, you can kind of read a couple of articles that were written about her turning 80. It's really good reading.
Well, you know, first of all, there's a number of things to hit on here. One, and most importantly, is, you know, the comment that because she was – pretty, people would listen to her. And that's certainly why I started this radio show, was that people have always told me that I had the face for radio. So I wanted to make sure that was true. And I decided, much like Gloria Steinem, that maybe people would listen to me, especially if they couldn't see me. But you got
the pretty face, but I got the voice.
The voice. That's why we got you on here. It's certainly not for your political views, but you know, it's true. You're so right. People take a lot of this granted. Women still have a long way to go on a lot of things. But my sister, my older sister, was 10 years older than me and raised me. And three women graduated with her from law school in like 1963. Well, today at the same law school, GW Law School here in Washington, more than 51% of the class is women. They're graduating more women than they are men. So things have changed dramatically. And I saw my mom, who was a single mom, was pretty well educated for what she did. She was an executive secretary. She worked mostly for the principal of a high school in North New Jersey, and then came down here and worked at a community college. You know, she didn't make a lot of money, and she faced a lot of discrimination. My sister, when she started in a law firm, she had to claw her way to the top, and she got lucky in a lot of cases. We should pay homage to all these women like Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem and all these people that have made it easier for women today. And we should not forget that we need to be ever vigilant if we want to keep our freedom and equality in this country. We still got a long way to go with equality. Women still don't make as much as men. And it always seems to me, you know, because men out on this, right? If your mom doesn't make as much money or your wife doesn't make as much money, that's money that comes out of your pocket too. I mean, we should all be fighting for equality of all people in society. It helps all of us. So my hat goes off to Gloria Steinem as well, even though it would be nice if my wife would actually do what I tell her to.
That's never going to happen.
It's so never going to happen.
You need to move on, you know, and not dwell on the impossible.
Yeah, I know. I'm never going to, you know, I'm never going to look like Brad Pitt. I'm never going to play in the NBA. And my wife,
and you're never going to be back to the size you were when you were in high school.
Well, I don't know about that, man. I'm going to try that.
I only say that because you were. Diet. Yeah, you had given me you were in my wedding, and you had given me your measurements were like when you were like 19, and what was that when you were like 30?
You people went cheap on the tuxedos, and you got me the Mexican sizes.
Oh, okay, that's right.
The American size, it would have fit fine. You tried to get me a leftover prom tuxedo or something, and it wasn't my fault.
In pink, but anyway, I guess we should take a break, right?
Okay.
This is our time for the break, and I chose a song that I think that the listeners will really enjoy. It's called the Internet Overdose Song, and I think you guys will, if you listen to it, it'll kind of make you smile, and it's so right on. So it's by Rhett and Link, and I guess here we go.
Oh, I remember a time when life was so much simpler and not so quick, way back in the year 2006. Never heard of RSSs. My hands were full with two email addresses and a MySpace page lying about my income and age.
I also had a blog about remote control cars, roboblog.blogspot.com. I updated it multiple times.
There you go.
Right. There you go. I like that.
I know. I had to play that. I just thought that was so funny.
Well, you know, let's see if we can get a few people to call in here and tell us what you think. We've been talking now for a while about the things that move us, and we'd like to know what you're concerned about. But moving on, the next thing that I want to talk about is the old gun lobby. Now, Kathleen and I have both reached out, so I know it's not my bad personality, because Kathleen,
that's true.
We both reached out to the National Rifle Association and a lot of its local affiliates, and we've asked them to come on the show and talk about guns, but they won't do it. And this week, I think they hit an all-time low. They're trying to stop the appointment of the new Surgeon General from Obama's pick for the new Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, because he said that guns were a national health problem. And I don't know how you can think that they're not a national health problem when people are dying every day in accidental shootings, suicides, and all sorts of other things that don't involve violent crime. They've come out recently against safe guns, you know, the guns in California that have a chip in them so only the owner can use them. They've come out against Dr. Murthy, who's trying to put together some good sense regulations on the health side about guns. And so I don't know what the problem is. If you've got a gun and you think you have a right to own it, let us know why you think that there should be no laws whatsoever about guns. Why is this the only sacred thing in our society?
Well, I mean, and let's be kind of break it down. What the gentleman said was that being in hospitals where he saw that, you know, gun wounds were part of a lot of the patients that he saw. So it is just like measles would be, you know, or just like food poisoning is. You know, it is an issue when you have when a lot of your patients coming into your ER are gun victims, you know. And again, I want to make it clear that I'm not anti-gun. I mean, we've had discussions. That's how we started the show, because you and I had such heated discussions about it. I do think that there are jurisdictions that need them on the border, like my sister out on a ranch in Arizona, in isolated areas. Areas where there's high drug trafficking, you know, all that stuff going on. But then I'm not for them in a city like New York City, because I've already said that I had these two old ladies who were my neighbors, and they used to pound on the wall all the time. And if I had a gun, I know at one point when I was going nuts, either during my pregnancy or my hormones, I probably would have shot them, because it was torture what they were doing. So and we know that in big urban cities, it's the crime is people shooting each other. I mean, it's crimes of passion. They know each other. So I am not. I do think the cities need to regulate guns in the city. And you know, a lot of people say, "Well, the bad guys have the guns." Yes, but you got to start somewhere. And eventually,
Well, and as you're saying, it's not the bad guys that are killing people. I mean, it's people that know each other. It's domestic.
Well, there are bad guys.
There are bad guys, right? But the majority of people that are being killed are not being killed by bad guys. They're being killed by people they know, and that's why. Look, I'm not against guns either, but I think if you can regulate and tax cars, and you can make people show they have a proficiency to use them, know how to use them, and insure them because they're dangerous, potentially dangerous, you ought to be able to do the same things with guns. I really do.
Yeah, it's a shame. And again, here, you know, do you keep somebody who's very qualified and who has great, you know, who has the energy and, let's say, great ideas in a position that he's going to be nominated for. Do you keep him from that just on one issue that he said this one,
right,
you know, sentence that is true? And you know, I did call the NRA and I spoke to them. I mean, I called them the national office. I called them in Arizona and I begged them. I said, look, you're coming on to a show where you're not going to be beaten up. I mean, right. I'm not completely in line with everything you say, but we want to understand where your platform is and why, you know, we just want to ask questions. We're not going to yell at you. You know, we're not going to call you names. It's an honest conversation and we cannot get anyone to come on. Now, we've even reached out to people who have internet shows. We've reached out to a lot of people. So anybody out there who may be listening to us, who knows somebody who's running, you know, even a chapter, we would love to talk to them. And we're going to show you as much respect as we would anyone else. We're not going to gang up on them. So I don't understand.
And I concede that people have a constitutional right to own a gun. Now, we have a comment from a caller. I don't know. Is the caller with us?
I don't think so.
Maybe just sent in a comment that said, when the government no longer gives itself the right to kill, then a ban on guns would be fair, desired, warranted, merited, earned, etc. That you have a point there. I mean, we do as a society go to war. We do have we accept that there are legitimate uses of guns. We do have a death penalty in many states. So the government reserves that right for itself, and maybe that needs to be looked at. And in many states, it has been looked at. I mean, the death penalty has been overturned in many states because the fact that it's fallible. I don't think, you know, the thing that bothers me, and I think it bothers Kathleen, I'll let her speak for herself, but is that we'd like to see some reasonable accommodation made between both sides so that people can feel safe and protected, but that we can keep the guns out of the hands of crazy people so we don't have what happened in Connecticut with those poor school children, or we don't have what happened at the Navy Yard, or what happened to Gabby Giffords there in Arizona, or, you know, happened in Aurora, Colorado, or Virginia Tech, or all those places. So things like background checks, I mean, that doesn't hurt anybody's ability to own a gun. A law-abiding citizen's right to protect themselves, that doesn't affect anything. And most gun owners who have been surveyed believe in background checks, and still we can't get that done.
And I think the one thing that you know, a lot of people don't realize is that a lot of those incidents that you discussed were people who had mental issues. Now, my son is a lot of my friends are a big fan of Ronald Reagan, but one of the things I remember so clearly was when he literally kind of stopped funding the mental institutions. I remember, like, from the next day in New York City, it was just flooded. Like, they opened the gates and we had so many mentally unstable people on the streets. I had a soup kitchen right on the corner down from my apartment, and it was like a war zone for me to get through. When I came out of the subway, I had to go past the church, and it was just like, it was a scary thing because these people were unstable and they were aggressive, they were angry, and they were hungry and they were cold. So since that time, we haven't done the funding for the mental health that we should. And as you see, a lot of these cases, I'm just pulling a statistic, but I bet you 90% of them, they all had mental health issues. And they either couldn't get help because they didn't have the insurance to pay for it, or, you know, the where they did go was so overrun with people. We have to realize that we have to make sure that the people that are out there get the help that they need. So it's a complicated issue, but it's something we have to address. And I do still think, I still have optimism. I don't believe that the government, and there's been so many articles written about this, that there's not going to be a registry that is going to be taken if people register their guns or have background checks. I still don't believe that this country could fall on the fall the way that Germany did, where, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the government is knocking on your door and they come to get your guns. I mean, I don't, those people in the military or in the police that would do that are our relatives. They're our fathers or brothers or cousins or boyfriends, whatever. I don't believe that in this country we could turn on each other the way that I've seen, like, say, in Croatia and Bosnia and Serbia and in Germany. I just don't see that happening. And maybe I'm an optimistic and maybe I'm just not in reality, but I just don't believe this country would stand for that. And I don't believe we would turn on one another.
Well, I agree with you 100%. And I think that, you know, this paranoia that you can't do anything with guns, because then you'll have to, then that'll lead you down a slippery slope. Taking people's guns away is absolutely ridiculous. You know, there's no right under the Constitution that is unlimited. And the Second Amendment, well, I guess the Founding Fathers thought that was pretty important, but they didn't think it was as important as the First Amendment. And you know, which is the most cherished amendment, I think, that we have. But you know what? You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. It's limited. And right. And guns, you know, the first three words of the Second Amendment are a well regulated. They don't say anybody should be able to have any firearm they want. They say a well regulated militia being necessary to a free state, the right of people to bear arms shall not be infringed. It doesn't say the right for people to bear any kind of thing they want, that they can have a tank or a semi-automatic weapon or a, you know, it just says the right to bear arms. And in the District of Columbia, you were right. You were willing to, you know, it was legal for you to have a shotgun, and that was your right to bear arms. This is an exact quote of the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So, you know, I agree you should have a right to keep arms, but I don't think that doing background checks or making you register that gun is any way in violation of the Second Amendment. And if you don't agree with me and you're out there, call in. Let's talk about it.
888.
Talk about it. Right. Go ahead.
888-627-6008. Well, there's another thing that I want to talk about that I find amazing in this conservative state that I live in, and that is that independents now there are more independent people registered to vote in the state of Arizona than Republicans and than Democrats. I think it's 1.1 million independents, and I think it's like maybe 1 million Republicans and like 986,000 Democrats. And I think I'm amazed by that there are so many independents in Arizona. And as you know, I am an independent because I'm just so kind of frustrated with the Democratic Party. And I definitely, if the Republicans could stay out of my bedroom and my body, I may be able to listen to something they say. But I find that amazing. And it actually, there are more independents in, I think there's 11 other states, and that's Alaska, Connecticut, Iowa, Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and Utah, and Arizona. So, you know, it's hard because I went on the internet to Google independent voters, and it's kind of, it's amazing because, you know, remember who was the guy with the big ears that was
when Ross Perot.
Yes, Ross Perot. Yes, and yeah. He came very close. And then I thought, well, this is going to be, I was kind of, you know, I was working at the Democratic Convention in New York. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be a movement of a third party. And then it just disappeared. And then Colin Powell kind of came back. People were thinking he would be the leader of an independent party. And that never really came to fruition. So I'm amazed. It's kind of like these voters, I think they're going to become really like the main party, but there is no leader of this party. There is no way. There's really, I just saw, in fact, that there is a page that is on Facebook for Arizona independent voters to help try to get them organized, because a lot of people don't know that in Arizona, if you're registered as independent, you can vote in one primary. And you and I were discussing that this is going to be a big issue, and this is another reason why we're in the state we are, that independents don't vote in primaries. And so what's happened is in the Democratic-Republican parties, you are getting these – because in both parties, the extreme left and the extreme right are the most vigilant. They are the most organized, and they want to put their people forward. So we have these very extremists in each party, and if you don't vote in the primary – then you get these candidates that are just a little bit too extreme for really what we need in America.
Well, you know, that's funny. And I think it's interesting that maybe the independents, unfortunately, are mostly people like you, people that are fed up with both parties, but have nowhere else to go. And right. I mean, and that, in my opinion, is problematic in our two-party system. You know, I'd like to see you hang out, continue to hang with the Democrats and try to change the Democrats, just like I want to see Diego and Zoe in the Republican Party trying to change the Republicans. I mean, that's the problem with multi-parties, you know. If you look at the Italians, for example, they may be the greatest democracy in the world because they let everybody run the government, right? They've got
There's
so many
like
parties.
28 parties or something
yeah,
like that.
And they're all, you know, like their government lasts for, you know, a couple months and then another government comes in and, you know, so you lose stability with having too many parties. But I think that independents that don't want to be affiliated with a party have an important voice and that they should be allowed to vote in primary elections. Now, they should have to choose a primary, Republican
right.
or Democrat. But,
right.
but you know, in Washington, D.C., we have preferential primaries. We have our primary actually is next week. It's a week from Tuesday, April 1st. And given the way politics has been going in the nation's capital, I think that we're having an election on April Fool's Day is, you know, just so appropriate and ironic that it almost defies description. But we'll have the Democratic primary on April 1st. And whoever wins the Democratic primary, the presumptive, he or she, will be the presumptive winner in November. I don't think that anybody that's ever won the Democratic primary in Washington, D.C. has then lost the general election. And you've been here,
yes.
Kathleen, with me on election day. And you know what we do on election day? We go out and we give donuts to people and we shake hands and we have fun, because once you won the Democratic primary, November just doesn't matter anymore. It's
right.
a done deal. So as much as I like that personally as a Democrat, I realize that, you know, we've suffered from having one party in control all the time in District Columbia.
Well, I think when you have one party, it tends to become more corrupt. I mean, that's what got me. You know, when I was always a Democrat when I was in D.C. and even in New York. But when I came back to Douglas and Cochise County and found how corrupt that Democratic Party was, and then reached out to the Democratic Party in Phoenix, the state party, and they were not interested in the things that I had to say, that I saw, you know, fraud in the ballots, that I, you know, I was seeing corruption and all kinds of things. And, you know, they didn't want to hear it, because all that mattered at the end of the day was that the votes counted for the Democrats. And I don't think that that is a way to run the country. You don't want a person just because he's a Democrat. I mean, they used to call Democrats in Cochise County Pinto Democrats, because they would say they would change their spots because the Democrats would vote for the person. Didn't matter necessarily the party, but they voted for the best person they thought for that position. And I think that's still what it should be like. You know, even if he may be a Republican, then if he's the best candidate, that's the one that we should think about voting for.
Well, and you know, you have to be involved with the party to make change. People don't even understand what the parties stand for anymore.
Right.
I mean, when you and I started with the Democratic Party, they stood for certain things. They stood for organized labor and a fair wage. They stood for women's rights. They stood for civil rights. You know, it's funny. I'll lecture young kids in this day and age, and I'll say things like Martin Luther King was a Republican.
Right.
And they'll go, no, he wasn't. He was a Democrat. No, he was a Republican, because most African-Americans in the South in those days were Republicans. But people have very short memories. They think of Johnson and Kennedy as you know, the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, pushed by Democrats as being seminal legislation in the civil rights movement, and it was. But also, there were a lot of Southern Democrats that stood in doorways
against it.
And
yeah.
Yes, and were against, were in favor of segregation, and you know, so we need to teach, not only teach kids about the parties in this country, but we need to get back to a core set of values. We need a common core for politics. Let's, if yeah, Dr. Miller's out there listening, let's get it out of the school system and put it into politics, you know, where we do have a certain set of principles that these parties stand for. I don't think we have that anymore. And that leads us to the last topic that we had on our agenda today that I'd really like to get in. We only have a few minutes left. And feel free to call in if you have something to say. But this thing about mega trends, the city versus the rural area, and what this says about the way people vote and the way people think. What do you have to say about that? As somebody that lives,
you don't live in a rural area anymore,
but you did live in a somewhat rural area for a while.
Oh my gosh, yes, in a town of 16,000 on the Mexican border, and I came from New York City, and it was just a totally different thing. And remember when I started talking to you, you said the next thing I was going to do is get a truck with a rack with the guns in the back, and I had become like this redneck. It is totally different from the urban areas to the rural areas. And whether it's education, religion, the gun issue, military values, it is very, very different. And that's why, you know, what we've seen is that the rural areas are becoming red Republican regions and the urban areas are, you know, blue Democratic ones. And it's amazing because there was David Wasserman, who analyzes politics in the Cook Political Report. He measures the change by examining how Democratic presidential candidates perform in counties with a Whole Foods and in counties with a Cracker Barrel. And in 1992, Bill Clinton won 60% of the Whole Foods counties and 40% of the Cracker Barrel counties. But in 2012, Obama won 77% of Whole Food counties and only 29% of Cracker Barrel counties. So, you know, and everyone knows what Cracker Barrel is. I love Cracker Barrel. I love to go there just because of his antiques. But, you know, it is a totally different concept, the Whole Foods versus the Cracker Barrel. And I think that the Democrats need to find a way to connect with rural Americans because they are very disenfranchised with the Democratic Party and very aligned with the Republican Party.
Right. I agree with that. And I think, you know, it's funny because, as you know, I was a direct mail consultant for very many years in politics. And when I was at the DNC, actually, was in the direct mail division at DNC, we used to use a thing called Claritas. And Claritas was actually developed by sociologists who broke the country up into 40 neighborhoods. Every neighborhood in America fell into one category, 40 categories. And that's how we would pick mailing lists. There were things like furs and station wagons, or Mercedes and champagne, or Volvos and libraries. And he had all these different neighborhoods. And he showed that the Claritas worked, that if you did well in furs and station wagons, you could choose all the furs and station wagon neighborhoods in America and you would do just as well. So it really, where people live said more about them than any other thing. And I don't know, it's a chicken and egg thing. Do they move there because of their feelings, or do they move there and then their feelings change? We'll have to leave that for another day because we only have 30 seconds left. So I'm going to let Kathleen sign off, but thanks for listening.
I'd like to tell the audience that I am going to buy Senator Michael Brown a new headset, because I know that his headset, even though he says it's new, is probably 20 years old. So you keep on going in and out, Senator Brown. And I think all I need to do is buy you what I have, which is a combat duty headphone set, and you'll be ready to go.
Oh, my God. The reason that I disagree with you is not because I'm going in. I don't need a new headset. You need a new head. I'll get a new headset. You get a new head, and we'll meet here next Sunday.
That's right. So join us for whoever we have. I think we were going to have a guest. We're going to try to get one, yes, whether it be on global warming or charter schools. And please join us in April as we bring on some of the people that were great on our show and kind of revisit and see where we are now 1 year later.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.